Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
What's up, guys? Today's date is January the 7th. I'm Steven Masso. As always, you are listening to Via the Source. In this episode, we're going to be going over some things about the Dolphins as well as the wild card round. Of course, there's the big news regarding quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. That will be in this episode. There will also be some discussions about wild card weekend and some of the matchups we saw there, some of the talking points. Of course, there are some very interesting narratives when it comes to the New England Patriots and whether their dynasty is over. So that will be talked about in this episode. So we begin the episode. Quarterback, Alabama quarterback Tua Tagovailoa, declared for the NFL draft. He held a press conference where he announced that he will be entering the 2020 NFL draft. And as a Dolphins focused podcast, of course, this has some serious repercussions. That is a huge news, and a lot of people are very excited about that. But this is news that is very important for the rest of the NFL because there are other quarterback needy teams that could also be making a move to get quarterback Tua Tagovailoa. Now, right now, the Miami Dolphins sit at the number 5 pick. There is a very realistic shot that Tua falls. Of course, he had that devastating hip injury, one that there is still a ton of good news coming out about. There's a lot of positive news in regards to the injury, but that cannot downplay how severe of a hip injury it was. So that could lead to him falling all the way to that number 5 pick to the Dolphins. Is there a chance that the Dolphins pass on him? I would say it's very, very, very slim that the Dolphins pass on him, unless the news coming out more and more is that the hip injury may not have been as good as it was originally presented. So that's a possibility. But there is also a chance that he may go before that number 5 pick. The Detroit Lions right now sit at the number 3 pick. Of course, on paper, they don't seem like they would be in the market for a quarterback right now because Matt Patricia's here. A lot of this staff for the Detroit Lions is depending on this upcoming season. They would be investing in a guy who will likely not play in 2020. It doesn't really make sense for them to go out and get the quarterback that another regime will be using. So from that standpoint, there is a realistic chance that one of these quarterback needy teams jumps up to that Detroit Lions pick and goes after Tua at that spot. The teams I'm looking at, the one that I see as the primary threat, one that I'm already seeing on Twitter, a bunch of photoshops in Tua in this team's jersey, is the Los Angeles Chargers. And of course, this makes a lot of sense for the Chargers. It seems like right now, as bad as Phillip Rivers was last year, they still want to continue rolling with him for at least another season. So that would be a perfect scenario for them to go out and get Tua. He's going to sit for a season. He'll sit with a guy who has a ton of experience, who has had a pretty successful NFL career, despite not really thriving in the playoffs. There is still a ton of things you could learn about Phillip Rivers, and this is a market in LA that desperately needs a star. We saw the LA Rams kind of have their moment last season, but the Chargers are struggling to sell out a soccer stadium right now. That is a huge issue for them. They need to go out and land some sort of superstar in order to prove that this was the right decision to move to LA. So I could totally see them making the move and jumping up for a guy like Tua, because not only are you getting the potential franchise quarterback, that is a massive name to bring to that LA market. That would be it would be a move that makes sense for the Chargers. So right now, I see them as the primary threat, as somebody who jumps above the Dolphins and just gives up everything they got to go out and move up in the draft for him. Now, another team that I could see doing this is the Indianapolis Colts. They're kind of in a similar situation. Jacoby Brissett was solid, kind of in that Alex Smith territory that I always talk about. He is definitely someone that's serviceable, but if you could go out and upgrade and make that leap and truly get a guy who could command a team that is set at a bunch of other positions, then it makes sense. So the Colts could be another team that I see here making a move and jumping up for Tua. And then another team that I don't think is being talked about enough is the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Now, they have a quarterback in Jameis Winston who is solid, but those comments made by Bruce Arians that if we could win with this quarterback, then we could sure as hell win with another quarterback. He said something along those lines. That is not something that you want to hear, and doesn't it really instill any sort of confidence in me that they truly think that Jameis is their franchise quarterback? Bruce Arians is a bold coach, somebody who values the quarterback position extremely heavily for them to go out and dump everything to go out and get a guy like Tua would not surprise me much either, but I will say that it would kind of put him in a little bit of a purgatory with the Jameis Winston situation. If he does end up playing well, there's going to be a lot of drama there in Tampa Bay. And then, of course, the other team is the Carolina Panthers. The Panthers rolled with Kyle Allen for a bit. It was promising, but I don't think anyone really thought that he would be the surefire guy to take over the spot. Cam Newton is definitely going to be going to another team. So maybe that is a spot to look at. Of course, they have Christian McCaffrey. They have DJ Moore, who had a terrific season. There is a decent amount of weapons for a guy like Tua to thrive there, but it would put him in a very massive hole for this 2020 season. It would almost guarantee that this next upcoming year is a loss too. And when you have a guy like Christian McCaffrey on a rookie deal playing so well, I can't help but think that that would be a waste of a season of such a talented running back. So those are the teams I'm looking at. You also have to have the Pittsburgh Steelers in that mix. They don't have the first round pick this season, but I guess theoretically they could do something drastic and go out and make the move, but I don't see that as likely given that Ben Roethlisberger seems pretty confident in returning and them giving up the first round pick of this year. It just seems like they don't have the ammo necessarily to do it. But those are my thoughts on that. When it comes to whether the Dolphins should pick him, of course, it's all going to come down to the injury and how well he seems to be recovering. That's going to be a huge thing. But my mentality is kind of the same when I talk about when I discuss fantasy football. It's what decisions can you live with? You know, if you go out there in fantasy football, and trust me, this will make sense. I know a lot of people are probably looking at me sideways. This will make sense. If you bench a guy like Nick Chubb 1 week, or you bench a guy like DeAndre Hopkins because you have a gut feeling that a guy like Will Fuller is going to go off, and that doesn't happen, then you're going to feel like an idiot. But it's the same way that I think the Dolphins should approach this. If they go out there and they pass on Tua and instead go for a guy like Jordan Love, and Tua ends up being the guy and Jordan Love doesn't work out, then you're going to feel extremely dumb about it. If you go out there and you get a guy like Tua, at least on paper, you made a decision that made perfect sense. And if it fails, then so be it. But you went out there and you did it. It would hurt much more if you pass on a guy like Tua and he succeeds than if you pass on a guy like Herbert or if you pass on a guy like Jordan Love and they end up being the guy. Of course, I'm very big on Jordan Love as well. If the Dolphins deem Tua not healthy enough, or if one of these teams I mentioned ends up sneaking Tua away from them, Jordan Love is a guy that I am completely on board for. I think the guy has a tremendous amount of upside. Justin Herbert is somebody that I am not too big on right now, but I will say that he doesn't look like a terrible prospect by any means. At least on paper, he has all the tools there. I just don't necessarily like him as much as I like guys like Jordan Love and, of course, Tua. Now, the big name in this upcoming draft right now is, of course, Joe Burrow. It seems like he's a lock to go at that first pick for the Cincinnati Bengals. Of course, things could happen. Things could shake up this, but I think he is about as surefire as a lock. I will say every year around the draft, there are a bunch of narratives that are thrown around. It seems like every quarterback, there are reports that they are viewing, you know, they'll say reports that Jordan Love is now viewed as the number one quarterback, reports that now Justin Herbert's being viewed as the guy. That will always happen, but it seems like it will always end up being the one who made sense in the end. That's what happened with Baker Mayfield. I assume it's going to happen with Joe Burrow. I think that when it comes to the combine and all that stuff, when they start measuring their hand sizes and their arm velocity, I think there will be some knocks on Joe Burrow from a talent perspective, from having the tools, but when it comes down to it, the guy had a terrific, undeniable season last year for for LSU. That should be enough to get him to that number one pick. I really think that he is going to be a lock there as of right now. So those are my thoughts on the Tua news, on the quick little view of what I think of the quarterbacks and how I expect it, at least as of right now, to shake up. So as we move on, we discuss the wild card round. To go game by game for each of these, and I won't go too in-depth. I don't want this to drag on too long. To go game by game, the Tennessee Titans defeated the New England Patriots by a score of 20-13. Out of respect, we will begin with the Tennessee Titans. And I was kind of a little bit hard on the media for over I guess, over-showcasing Ryan Tannehill. He had a great regular season, especially towards the tail end. There's no doubt that he was playing at a near-elite level. But the guy, the star for them, was always Derrick Henry. The numbers he was putting up was ridiculous, and he was able to snatch that rushing title away from Nick Chubb. He was on an absolute tear, and I think that's where the majority of the credit should have gone. And that's how it was in this game from an offensive standpoint for the Tennessee Titans. Derrick Henry, just an absolute monster. 200 total yards, 182 yards rushing, and a touchdown, 5.4 yards per carry. And Ryan Tannehill only had 72 yards passing in this game. Really, truly a testament to how effective Derrick Henry was when you consider that he had over 100 yards rushing more than passing yards for this team. That's just insane. That's an insane stat to see, especially when you consider that this was a victory for the team. Just ridiculous numbers. Now, of course, on paper, this wasn't Tannehill's brightest performance. He did have a few clutch throws in this game. I said he was good towards the tail end of the season, and I was never really a Tannehill hater. I just think his time kind of ran out with Miami. I just didn't think there were the weapons around him. He wasn't talented enough to really make the guys around him into stars, and I think that's kind of still what's happening here in Tennessee. I know a lot of people are pointing to him now taking this huge next step, but what I see from him isn't too drastic of a difference from what I saw from him in Miami. I think Gase and his offense was a huge issue. I think they ran a little bit too conservative, and that really hurt Tannehill's growth and his ability to progress. But even now, when you look at his stat line, it's basically what he has been doing throughout his whole career, maybe to a greater extent. And of course, the rushing is going to help with that tremendously. Having a receiver like A.J. Brown is going to help tremendously. But a very high completion percentage, very effective. Turnovers kind of in the middle on average, maybe a little bit below average. Terrific quarterback rating. And he was always somebody who showed up. I mean, you saw how many game-winning drives he had for Miami in the fourth quarter. The stat line's ridiculous. Ryan Tannehill was never a bad quarterback, so it shocked me when people would kind of create this narrative that Miami turned away from him because he was the problem. It's not necessarily that he was the problem, it's just that he wasn't the answer. His time simply ran out with Miami. If he was able to show what he was doing now just a little bit sooner, then maybe, but there was just too many years of the same, and sometimes it really just helps a player to go into a different environment and it works out for him. There's no bitterness from me when it comes to Ryan Tannehill. I still think that he is a good quarterback, definitely should be a starter in this league, and frankly, I'm happy to see him succeeding with the Titans. And of course, it makes it easier to root for a guy when they're taking down a dynasty of a team in the New England Patriots. Tom Brady here, 209 yards passing, no touchdowns. He had a very big pick six towards the end of the game, and there were several other balls in this game that could have very well have been picked off. But really, at least from the offensive standpoint, just a completely lackluster performance, one that lacked the efficiency that we're so used to seeing with the New England Patriots, to the extent that people are saying now, well, is the dynasty over? I mean, the Dolphins beat them heading into this. They lost their playoff bye, and then they come out looking like this. There was just no fire in this team. Is the dynasty over? Now, you must understand that the Patriots are at such a high standard of play. What we expect from them is so high that even if they lose in the playoffs, we're assuming that their dynasty's over. I mean, there are a ton of teams in the NFL that if they just got to the playoffs, that would be enough of a reason to be excited. The Patriots definitely look bad here. Anytime Belichick is in control of a team, I will be hesitant to say the dynasty is over. But when it comes to Tom Brady, his career being over, his career being an elite quarterback, now that is a very legitimate argument, because in this game, he lacked a lot of arm velocity in my mind. Of course, I'm not a scout, but just by watching it, those throws to the outside, the ones that we look at, and you know that they need to have that extra zip. They need to get there quick, or someone could cut off the route underneath. They did not look like they were getting there quick enough. So that really is making me wonder, is this kind of the cliff that was always talked about when it came to Tom Brady. And then you add on top of that, there's all these talks that could the Patriots be moving away from Tom Brady. Tom Brady allegedly sold his home over there in Boston. He has a home over in LA. There are talks that maybe the Chargers would be a team that are interested. Of course, they need some sort of superstar. Now, I don't think it makes sense. I do think that Tom Brady still is an upgrade over Philip Rivers. And of course, the Chargers still look like they're in kind of a win now state given the roster. It makes some sense, but I'm not sure it happens. I just think that Tom Brady's legacy, it is too valuable. There is too much to thank him for. If he did that for the team I root for, which is cough, cough, the Dolphins, if any quarterback goes in there, wins the amount of Super Bowls he did, wins the amount of conference titles, just absolutely dominates, not just his division, not just his conference, but essentially the entire league, I would let a guy like that leave on his own terms. I wouldn't say, hey, your time is up. You did so much for this team that you can leave when you want. That is how I would approach Tom Brady if I'm the Patriots. But of course, the Patriots are not like many teams. So maybe they do, in fact, move away from him. And he, with this competitive mind state that people talk about so much, has this fire to continue playing, and he goes on to play for another team. If I had to guess what that percentage in my mind would be that he plays for another team, I would say it's probably like at 20%. I still don't think it's likely, but who knows? I mean, we've seen stranger things in the NFL, but I just don't think you let a guy like Tom Brady leave, and I don't really know how much he has left in the tank. I do think his days of being considered an elite quarterback are just about over. So we move on to the game between the Seahawks and the Eagles. This was one that I expected to go in this direction, and then the moment Carson Wentz went down with an injury, it was all but sure for me that the Eagles were going to lose this game. As solid as Josh McCown's been throughout his career, I just don't have confidence in him going up against a guy who was near MVP status till Lamar Jackson just went off this season. MVP caliber Russell Wilson. There was just no way in my eyes the Eagles were going to come away with this win. And I tweeted something. I tweeted death taxes and Carson Wentz missing the postseason. And I saw a lot of tweets going around the NFL media about, you know, you shouldn't be calling Carson Wentz injury prone and you shouldn't use this as a knock against him. And when I tweeted that, I was also not using that as a knock against him either. I was just saying that it's an unfortunate reality that whatever happens, it causes Carson Wentz to miss the postseason. I don't think that Carson Wentz is necessarily injury prone because some defensive lineman hit him in the back of the head. I just think that is an unlucky circumstance. Those are things that happen in the NFL. It's not that he is not tough enough for the league. That's just a human getting hit in the back of the skull, and that is what naturally will happen. It doesn't matter who's in that situation, just unlucky things. Tony Romo just had those unlucky circumstances as well. If your body bends a certain way, if you get tackled a certain way, you just get hurt. And it's not because you're injury prone, it's not because you're not tough enough, it's just this is a contact sport and these things are bound to happen. So I did not mean that as a knock against Carson Wentz. I don't think he's necessarily injury prone, but I just do think this was an unlucky circumstance that led to him missing yet another crucial postseason game. And when it comes to the Eagles, a guy that I am extremely excited about from the Eagles rushing game is Miles Sanders, man. The guy is so electric. His elusiveness is ridiculous. I really do think that if their passing attack was better and if you could open it up for him for Miles Sanders, the guy is terrific as a receiver as well. I think this is somebody in fantasy football leagues to keep on your radar for next year. He had a terrific tail end of the season, helped me win my championship. I wanted to go out and buy a jersey. I was so hyped. The guy is going to have a terrific career, I think, and he will be somebody who's valuable both in the rushing game and the passing game for years to come. Now we move on to the game between the Texans and the Bills. The Texans won this game a score of 22-19. It was an ugly game. Don't let that highlight of Deshaun Watson at the end, which was so awesome to see, fool you, because it was a truly rough game to watch. Deshaun Watson, like I said, that final play, he was able to scramble. He literally had two guys bounce off of him. they could not make the sack. He moved around, made a huge pass. It's just things like that, those it factors. People could break down whatever they want in the combine. They could break down your finger size. They could break down your arm velocity, your cone speed. But some guys just have that it factor. You want the ball in their hands. There is no denying that Deshaun Watson has it, and you can't measure someone's ability to be unfazed in those big moments. Just Josh Allen, as good of a game as he was having initially, when it came down to the crucial moments, he looked a little bit scared. Deshaun Watson looked composed throughout the whole game, and I think that was the difference here. Now, to talk about the Bills and Josh Allen just a little bit, Josh Allen was knocked so much for his accuracy, especially in his rookie season, in the combine leading up to it. That was always the big narrative. Of course, he ended up being a surprisingly effective runner. He was always regarded as somebody who is sneaky quick, but just how effective he is on the ground is quite a bit of a shock to me. He had 92 yards rushing in this game, 264 through the air, but no touchdowns for him in this game. I will say that Josh Allen is impressive. It looks like he wills his team to victory, and it is something that's admirable to watch. It is kind of Tebow-esque. I wouldn't say to that extent. Of course, Tebow's arm was a legitimate issue. His throwing motion, there was just a ton of things wrong with how Tebow threw the ball. But still, when Tebow played, he was able to kind of will his team to victory by any means. Josh Allen kind of has that. He may not have the accuracy. He has a cannon of an arm, but he just makes plays happen. And I think to an extent, he might try to do that too much. He forces balls a little bit too much. There was a huge run he had, and then for some reason that doesn't make sense, he threw it over his head and lateraled it. I think he tries to do too much, but without him playing just to the wall, you know, just completely all out, the Bills, I don't think, are in this position. So I will say, for that reason, I have had a change of heart about Josh Allen. I was kind of down on him. He was the one guy that I did not want the Dolphins to draft. But I do think right now what he is showing is just a true level of intensity and passion when he plays is something that's admirable to watch. And then Devin Singletary, just a really, really effective runner and pass catcher in this game as well. He had 58 yards on the ground, 76 through the air. He missed a ton of the season this year, but I do think he's another guy that could just have another terrific season next year. Keep him on your fantasy radar right there next to Miles Sanders. Now, the last game to discuss in this one is the one between the Vikings and the Saints. This was a game that was won very last minute, came in overtime. There was the possibility that there would be a challenge on an offensive pass interference call. Some saying that the Saints were robbed on the fact that it wasn't reviewed. I would say that maybe it should have been at least reviewed, but I think it's too picky of a play to call. Kirk Cousins threw a pass to the end zone. Kyle Rudolph kind of gave a little bit of a push off, but kind of what in my eyes is permissible. That's kind of the play that happens on every single instance between a receiver and a DB. Those are just the kind of hand fights that go on. I think that was too strict of one if you were going to call it back. They ended up keeping the ruling on the field. It was a score of 26-10. The Vikings won this one. A huge day from Dalvin Cook, who had 94 yards rushing and another 36 on the ground. Adam Thielen had 129 yards receiving, including this huge over-the-shoulder catch where he was able to track the ball. A very, very difficult catch. One that I think has been overlooked in terms of how difficult it is to make that catch. It's kind of, if you watch baseball, you've seen the Willie Mays over the shoulder catch where he dove. You've seen the Jim Edmonds over the shoulder catch. This was kind of similar in that nature, being able to track the ball, having a defender draped over you, and find it while looking over your own shoulder and looking up. That's a very difficult catch to make. Huge props to Adam Thielen. For the Saints' side of the ball, it was kind of a lackluster performance from Drew Brees, 208 yards, a touchdown. He also had a pick, and he had a very bad fumble in this game. It was a huge outing from Taysom Hill, who is the ultimate Swiss Army knife. I throw that around often, but Taysom Hill is that to an extent that we have not seen in the NFL. He had 50 yards rushing in this game. He had 25 yards receiving and a touchdown, and he also had a 50-yard pass all in this game. So this guy is tremendous. He is used all across the field. It's really impressive to watch. I had a friend say, well, he asked me, who are you rooting for in the playoffs? I said Lamar Jackson, just because One, he's a very nice guy. It's very easy to root for him. He is so respectful, and just the way he carries himself is so professional. Aside from that, though, he's playing football in a way that we have not seen. I mean, you can point to Michael Vick, but the effectiveness that Lamar Jackson has right now and kind of the narrative that was built around him, kind of the negativity of him not being able to succeed at this position is something to root for. And I said that, and I said, you know, the fact that he's doing something that is so different. Someone asked me, would you root for Taysom Hill then? And I said, yeah, of course, if he was able to have a very big impact, because his role, while it has been across the field, he isn't impacting games, of course, the way Lamar Jackson is. But in this game, his role being so strong was something that I really root for. Guys like Josh Allen, Lamar Jackson, Taysom Hill in this game are just playing football very differently. They're not winning in the traditional way that we're used to. These are guys just finding different ways to put the teams on their back, and that is what I took away from this wild card weekend. Of course, we didn't see Lamar Jackson play. He had a bye week, but right now he is one of my favorites to look for as we continue through the NFL postseason. And that's how I'm going to wrap it up, guys. As always, I appreciate all the views, all the comments, all the interactions. I have some people on Twitter that have been showing me so much support, and it really does mean a lot. And as always, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can follow me at Shady Steven. That's more of my personal Twitter. If you want to follow more for Strictly Football News, that is at Via The Source. Go check it out there. I've been getting a lot more followers, and again, it's greatly appreciated. If you haven't already, if you could leave a review on the Apple Podcast app or whatever you get this, wherever you listen to the podcast, there's typically a way to leave a review. That helps a bunch. And of course, if you have any thoughts or any sort of criticisms or comments or things that you would like for me to cover in future episodes, that's something that I would like to incorporate more. I've gotten some very good questions that I'm happy to answer on the podcast, and I would love to continue doing that moving forward. So guys, as always, it was a pleasure to be your host. Until next time, I'm Steve Amasso, and this was Via The Source.